It's clear that there are some caveats to his commitments on denuclearization.
And one expert on North Korea thinks that might be a non-starter for the United States. It's Thursday, March 29th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. You are part of this program. Please join us on VOA Asia Facebook. Do it now. Also ahead, the U.S. and South Korea have completed the renegotiation of a six-year-old free trade pact. The Chinese are testing a new way to increase panda proliferation. And an internationally famous Australian actress expresses some strong feelings toward Aung San Suu Kyi. All on today's VOA Asia. U.S. President Donald Trump says there's a good chance North Korean leader Kim Jong-un will do what is right for his people and for humanity by moving to denuclearize the Korean Peninsula. In a Twitter post early Wednesday, Trump said he looks forward to his planned meeting with Kim, but emphasized the need to keep up maximum sanctions and pressure in the meantime. China said that during Kim's secretive visit to Beijing, he confirmed his commitment to denuclearize the Korean Peninsula and engage in talks with the United States and South Korea. Trump said Xi sent him a message saying his meeting with Kim went well and that the North Korean leader looked forward to meeting with Trump. We welcome to VOA Asia Abraham Denmark. He is director of the Asia program at the Woodrow Wilson Center in Washington. A lot of people are saying as long as Kim keeps saying denuclearization on the Korean Peninsula, he means the U.S. getting out of there.
Well, actually, Kim Jong-un has not said much in detail about what he means. And his statements very closely mirror those of his father, who also committed to denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula several times. But when his father said it, it meant that North Korea would denuclearize only after the United States ended its alliance with South Korea and withdrew troops from the Korean Peninsula, which has always been a non-starter for the United States. It remains to be seen if Kim Jong-un retains the same implication. But it's clear that there are some caveats to his commitments on denuclearization, and it remains to be seen what those caveats may be. The other piece to be aware of is that looking at North Korean media, they've been covering Kim Jong-un's visit to Beijing very heavily. There's, I believe, 8 stories in North Korean media, about that visit. Not once does it even mention denuclearization. For North Korean media, it's all about Kim Jong-un's meeting with Xi Jinping as an equal and North Korea's status as a major power.
Well, now where does this put China in this whole chessboard that is the whole Korean situation?
After the announcement that Kim Jong-un would meet with the South Korean president and with President Trump, Beijing suddenly found themselves on the outside looking in. And that's very uncomfortable for them, considering it's the most important security issue in a region they seek to dominate. So by welcoming Kim Jong-un to Beijing, Xi Jinping has reasserted China's role and sent a very clear message that that China is going to have to play a major role in whatever happens related to North Korea and its nuclear program.
How about the other players here? What about South Korea? Maybe we want to ask about, obviously we want to ask about the U.S., but maybe we also want to add Japan into this.
Right. So it gets less attention here in the U.S., but in a few weeks, Kim Jong-un will be meeting with the South Korean president, Moon Jae-in. And President Moon in South Korea campaigned on a platform of improving relations with North Korea. And North Korea has certainly been reaching out to President Moon. North Korean media is filled with calls for closer relations between North and South Korea. In fact, stating that the only factor that gets in the way of closer relations between North and South Korea is influence from outsiders, meaning the United States. So that's a very important meeting. My expectation is that Kim and Moon will be looking at a variety of programs designed to improve North-South relations. I also expect Seoul will try to get North Korea to say something about denuclearization as well, to set the table for Kim's meeting with President Trump. But their focus is primarily going to be on improving the relationship between North and South Korea. For Japan, they're concerned that they don't have an announced summit either. The Japanese are concerned that the United States may cut a deal with North Korea that leaves its nuclear program in place and remains a threat to Japan. But the Japanese are also concerned that diplomacy may fail and that the United States or North Korea may see that as an example, as a demonstration that diplomacy is not going to work, and look at military options as a way to address this crisis. So Japan right now is feeling very uncomfortable.
And what about the United States?
There's a lot that's unknown about the United States. President Trump has been very clearly raising expectations about North Korean concessions, saying, really highlighting the hope that North Korea is going to denuclearize. In fact, he put out a tweet recently saying that others in past administrations had said that denuclearization is impossible, but look at the progress we're making with our efforts and expressing a lot of hope at the meeting. One thing that's important to note, however, is that one of the most outspoken outspoken doubters about North Korea's willingness to denuclearize and one of the most outspoken skeptics of diplomacy has been his new national security advisor, John Bolton. So how President Trump approaches this meeting with Kim Jong-un, if he tries to strike a deal or sees it more as an opportunity to issue an ultimatum, remains to be seen. But one of the fears in the region right now is what happens if the meeting fails, if the two leaders fail to come to some sort of an agreement. Does President Trump become convinced that diplomacy is not going to work and that he has to look at what he calls phase two option, which is the military option?
Abraham Denmark is the director of the Asia program at the Woodrow Wilson Center for Scholars in Washington. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
These are among the top Asia stories currently trending on VOANews.com. Uzbekistan Tuesday hosted an international conference on Afghanistan and offered to host peace talks between the Afghan government and the Taliban in an effort to help end more than 16 years of war in the country. A close ally of Aung San Suu Kyi has been elected as Myanmar's new president by that country's parliament. Hundreds of demonstrators gather in Kuala Lumpur to protest a controversial electoral plan they say would benefit embattled Malaysia Prime Minister Najib Razak. Scientists say debris from a non-functioning Chinese space station could crash to Earth as early as Friday. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the VOANews.com website. We are very happy you're with us here on VOA Asia in what many see as a victory for the Trump administration's trade policy. The U.S. and South Korea have completed the renegotiation of a six-year-old free trade pact known as CORUS that President Donald Trump had called unfair and threatened to abandon. In exchange for an exemption from a new U.S. tariff on imported steel, South Korea will allow in more U.S. vehicles, reduce barriers to other American products, and extend a U.S. tariff on South Korean pickup trucks. A side deal will also aim to prevent Seoul from pushing down its currency, the won, to give its exports a competitive advantage. Shane Oliver, a Sydney-based chief economist with AMP Capital, told VOA's Victor Beatty it shows that while President Trump can be a savvy and tough negotiator that often scares people and upsets the financial markets, he is willing to negotiate.
This deal, which is often referred to as CORUS, he has threatened to terminate it several times since he's become president. So the fact that it's been renegotiated with, I think, only relatively minor concessions on the part of South Korea is a good sign that Donald Trump is open to negotiation. He's not seeking to withdraw the U.S. from global trade.
When you look at the list of concessions, you say there weren't that many by South Korea, but it seems like South Korea is the one that gave more than it took.
That's right. I think that was probably always going to be the case. President Trump has a view that the U.S. has sort of got the wrong end of the deal when it comes to some of these trade deals. So it's tended to be the case that other countries, South Korea in this case in relation to car imports and exports to the US in relation to steel, that those other countries are doing most of the adjusting. And I suspect the same will apply in relation to NAFTA, that ultimately will be Mexico and Canada that will give up more as opposed to the US.
Why do you think South Korea was so quick? I mean, the negotiations didn't take very long at all, so quick to reach agreement.
I think the South Koreans realized that, you know, to some degree, Donald Trump had them over a barrel. You know, they had to accept to something, otherwise the deal could get torn up and that would leave them in a far worse position than they were in 6 years ago before the deal was actually implemented. So I think many of these countries do have trade surpluses with the US. And, of course, Donald Trump has tweeted that he thinks, well, that gives him a bit more bargaining power. And, of course, in this case, that has proved to be the case.
Shane, you mentioned NAFTA. The U.S. is in negotiations with both Canada and Mexico to renegotiate that quarter-century-old free trade pact. The U.S. also in talks with Brazil, the European Union, Australia, and Argentina. Will this agreement with South Korea prove as perhaps a model for the others?
It could well prove to be a model in terms of the way things might go with those other countries, particularly Canada and Mexico, in the first instance, being the ones that give up more. And this, I guess, reflects the trading imbalances that the US. The US has a huge trade deficit with the rest of the world. Therefore, countries which in turn have a trade surplus with the US, such as parts of Europe, Germany, for example, they're the ones under most pressure here.
Shane Oliver said, while a victory for the U.S. administration, it will not solve all of America's trade problems. He said American labor costs remain among the highest, and that will only encourage U.S. businesses to ship operations overseas. He said the U.S. consumes more than it earns, and that is part of the deficit problem. While longer term, automation will do away with many of the manufacturing jobs Mr. Trump campaigned to preserve or to bring back. Happening now in Asia, Myanmar elects an aide to Aung San Suu Kyi as its president. Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi is accused of spying on his own citizens. And the U.S. wins what some are calling modest trade concessions from South Korea in a new agreement. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. There are fewer than 2,000 wild pandas in the world. However, as VOA's David Byrd reports, a new documentary tells how scientists are working to introduce captive-bred panda cubs into the wild.
The giant panda is an icon in China, but fewer than 2,000 of the animals remain in the wild. Scientists at the Chengdu Panda Base in Sichuan Province have been working for years to increase the captive panda population. Now a new documentary, Pandas, tells of a program to introduce some of those cubs into the wild.
They've been carefully bred for a special mission, to be a panda force in the battle against extinction.
Wildlife biologist Hua Rong from Chengdu worked with naturalist and author Ben Killam, who specializes in releasing orphaned black bears into the wild.
Hurong has been here to visit a couple times and met the black bears. It was her first trip here, meeting the black bear cubs that made her realize that this could be done with pandas.
The film shows how Hurong, Killam, and biologist Jake Owens worked to choose and to prepare a panda cub named Chin Chin. The film was written and co-directed by Drew Feldman and narrated by actress Kristen Bell. Feldman told VOA his first challenge was to build the trust necessary for the film to be shot.
We had to gain their trust, and also they had to, you know, gain our trust a little bit as well. You know, we wanted to make sure that they would actually give us the access we needed to make the film, and they wanted to make sure that we would tell their story honestly.
For 2 years, Jake Owens worked with Chin Chin in the bamboo forests of Chengdu. Eventually, the day came when she left the captive panda enclosure for the first time.
After 2 years together, the big day arrives. Jake leads Chin Chin out into the wild for the very first time.
Owens told VOA that building the team and working with the Chinese scientists had one goal, increasing the number of wild pandas.
And that's the whole point of this project, is to get pandas that are born from captive-born mothers and born in a human care facility, and then get them to transition out into the wild.
Pandas is shot in IMAX 3D. The film opens in the U.S. April 6th. In Washington, I'm David Byrd.
This is VOA Asia.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA Podcasts a try.
VOAnews.com.
Visit our website at VOAnews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA Podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
This news alert from VOA Asia, President Donald Trump says there is a good chance North Korea leader Kim Jong-un will do what is right for his people and for humanity by moving to denuclearize the Korean Peninsula. A Chinese space lab is likely to come crashing down to Earth this weekend. The UN envoy says an emerging wing of the Islamic State militant group in Afghanistan could threaten peace in the country. Visit VOA Asia Facebook every day for top stories and great features to see and to share. This is VOA Asia. As we continue, Australian actress Cate Blanchett says she is bewildered by Myanmar leader Aung San Suu Kyi's silence over the atrocities being committed against Rohingya Muslims. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
More than 670,000 Rohingya refugees from Myanmar have sought safety across the border in Bangladesh since August 2017, after a military campaign against the minority group that a UN official has previously called genocide. Oscar-winning actress Cate Blanchett visited some of the displaced Muslims from Myanmar last week in her capacity as a UNHCR goodwill ambassador. The Australian star warns that thousands of refugees are at risk of disease and starvation as the monsoon season approaches. The Rohingya are not recognised as citizens by Myanmar and have lived under a segregated ethnic system in the western Rakhine state for decades. Blanchett is criticising Myanmar State Councillor Aung San Suu Kyi for not speaking out over the crisis.
It is bewildering, isn't it, that someone who has been such a fighter for even a fragile democracy, someone who upholds human rights, does not seem to be speaking out more clearly about the atrocities that are so very clearly happening under her watch. The most pressing thing for me is the need to support the refugees in the very immediate present as the monsoon comes. Obviously, political solutions are absolutely vital.
Aung San Suu Kyi was in Australia earlier this month for the Association of Southeast Asian Nations Summit, where she was also criticised by the Malaysian Prime Minister. In unusually stern language, Najib Razak said Myanmar's treatment of Rohingya Muslims put them at risk of radicalisation by extremists because they have no hope for the future. Australian Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull said Aung San Suu Kyi had addressed the controversy during private talks with other Southeast Asian leaders in Sydney. Aung San Suu Kyi was kept under house arrest for many years by Myanmar's military dictators before the country embraced democracy. The author and winner of a Nobel Peace Prize was widely thought to be the champion of human rights and tolerance in Myanmar, although her reputation has clearly been dented by the Rohingya crisis. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
This news alert from VOA Asia. President Donald Trump says he looks forward to his planned meeting with Kim Jong-un, but emphasizes the need to keep up maximum sanctions and pressure in the meantime. China said that during Kim's secretive visit to Beijing, he confirmed his commitment to denuclearize the Korean Peninsula and engage in talks with the United States and South Korea. And a sandstorm in Beijing drove air safety to dangerous levels and prompted the Chinese government to issue a blue warning. That is the lowest or most dangerous on their four-tier warning scale. All of the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Efforts to bolster Afghanistan's armed forces, along with an increased use of American air power, seems to be doing little to change that country's reputation as a magnet for foreign fighters and jihadists. Afghan officials have been warning for months now about the flow of about 3,000 foreign fighters, many of whom had been coming from Pakistan and Uzbekistan to join the Islamic State terror group's Afghan affiliate, IS Khorasan. Now officials are warning of a new surge of jihadists, many coming to Afghanistan from the Middle East places like Iraq and Syria via routes that lead through Pakistan. It's the Afghan National Security Advisor, Mohammad Hanif Atmar, said during a visit to Washington last week, there's been a growth in the number of the foreign fighters in the country. We're talking about hundreds of them coming from the Middle East through Pakistan and other regional groups. Afghan and Western officials say that while precise numbers are hard to come by, and like before, the fighters are not focused only on joining IS. With the help of small loans, women in villages in India's northern Haryana state are emerging as entrepreneurs and in the process improving family incomes and winning respect in a deeply patriarchal society. Anjana Pasricha visited one all-women group that has set up a dairy project to understand how their lives have changed.
These women were hugely embarrassed going door to door to collect milk. When they opened a small dairy about 4 years ago in Taprana village in Haryana, where a woman's place is considered to be inside the home. Today, the seven are confident businesswomen churning out milk products such as cream and yogurt worth approximately $7,000 every month. Pushpa Bhatia, a former farm laborer, now drives a minivan they bought recently to make it easier to distribute these products.
I had no knowledge about how to speak to people better off than us. Now I am proud. Now I can speak to anyone confidently. I don't hesitate.
It was a challenge to learn how to keep accounts, book orders, and carve a niche in a business dominated by men, says Prabha Gupta, who is at the helm of the project.
The men thought these are women. What can they do? They will work for 2 months and then quit. We took a pledge that won't happen. We will move ahead.
Work has boomed. From collecting 5 liters of milk a day when they started, to now collecting nearly 175 liters. Besides saving some money, they take home about $100 a month. That eases household expenses and enables them to improve their children's lives.
My son went to a government school. Now I have put him in a private school. I was not able to study, but let my children be well educated.
The dairy got off the ground with the help of small loans from non-profit Arpana Services, which works for women's empowerment and has won local recognition. But Ish Bhatnagar, who supervises the project, says the real change lies elsewhere.
Their husbands, who used to often abuse them, beat them, now turn to them for help in securing loans. They depend on them for money. Their lives are completely transformed. Now they have made their own houses.
The women have emerged as leaders in their village and often hold meetings to address problems other women face. Scores of such small entrepreneurial ventures are giving a voice to women, says Kamlesh Sharma, who leads a similar project in a neighboring village.
First, we were seen as weak. They can't reply to us. If we intimidate them, they will step back. That has changed. They know we are capable. Village councils also respect us and involve us in matters concerning women.
By stepping into non-traditional roles and loosening the grip of patriarchy, these women are paving the way for these young girls to seize a new future. Anjana Pasricha for VOA News, Haryana.
You have been listening to VOA Asia. Get our program on iTunes and SoundCloud, download our podcast, and take VOA Asia with you. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Jonah Cummings, our managing director, Diane Gal, and our VOA Asia team of Jim Stevenson, David Byrd, and Skylar Ogden. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Have a wonderful day.